Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Welcome to Big Blend Radio with Nancy and Lisa. Today is our Toast of the Art Show with artist Victoria Chick. Victoria is a contemporary figurative artist and an early 19th, 20th century print collector. Say that real fast. She is based in Silver City, which is in the southwest corner of New Mexico. And this is really a growing art community. It's pretty amazing. A lot of art galleries, and she is working on the development of the Southwest Regional Museum of Art and Art Center. So we always love to catch up with her about this project that's been in the making for a few years now. And she's working with an awesome team of people to make this come to life. So everyone go to Victoria's website. It is victoriachick.com. So welcome back, Victoria. How are you?
Thank you, Lisa. I'm just doing great this afternoon and waiting for the rain to come to Silver City.
So you've had a little bit, right? A little bit of storm action and rain. So we're kind of at the tail end of the monsoon season for Silver City, right?
Well, that's what I thought, but it keeps coming in waves. And we did have a lot of rain about a week ago. And in fact, it nearly washed out a bridge on 180. Wow. So that was pretty exciting. They wouldn't let traffic go across it for about a day because they had to do some emergency repair work. So that was very exciting because it cut off a lot of people from coming into town.
Wow. That's amazing. That's pretty amazing. I mean, going from the Southwest having a drought, and I know, you know, there's still a drought situation, but it seems like there's been some rain even in California, which is great. But it's good to hear about rain, but hopefully everyone will stay safe while all of that is happening. I'm excited about today's topic, Alice Standish Buell, talking about her. We've been talking about women in art over the last few months and, you know, highlighting these different women in art history and, you know, even trying to Google Alice Standish Buell, your website comes up with her information, but there's not a huge amount out there about her. And how do you find these women in art? I mean, it's you tend to find these women that really do need to have the light shone on them with their, you know, their amazing careers.
Well, as you know, I've been collecting prints for a long time through various places. Some of it I get on eBay. Some of it I've collected from going to garage sales. Very few I've actually gone to galleries to get. But over that course of that time, I've always responded to the image and how it strikes me. And so I when I first started collecting, I knew nothing about most of these artists whose work I had. And when I retired, I started really investigating their lives and what other things they did. And so it's been a learning experience, and it's been not always easy to find information. So I have had to dig, and I've enjoyed that because art history is one of my loves. But when you're trying to find information, sometimes it's very sketchy, and that was the case with Alice Standish Buell. In fact, one of the sites I visited listed her teacher, Martin Lewis, and so I looked him up, and there was like scads of information about Martin Lewis compared to poor Alice Standish Buell. But it all fits together. It's good to find out who their connections were. And then sometimes who they taught, and their lives are really, to me, are very interesting.
I love finding out about these women because, you know, so much of our history was, you know, men at the time, you know, mm-hmm. What was especially like, you know, we think about the Great Impressionists of America, but there's a lot of women, and I know we've talked about that before on the show, but I just, you know, there's museums, and I think that's kind of is that part of your spark to even have the museum too, is there's these artists that should be showcased more. I know you can find Alice Standish Buell is in some museums in the country, but it's really important that we don't lose sight of their art. Obviously, if you own a piece, you're not going to lose sight of her. But sometimes you forget the story behind the artist. You know, you're looking at the art, but who created it, you know? And I think that's where museums do a good job. So is that part of it for you with the museum, is not just the art, but sharing the story of the artist?
Well, definitely. One of the things museums do so well is they are educational. And when they do it, they mount an exhibition, there's a narrative that goes with it that tells you more in depth, or maybe even something you didn't know at all about the artist that you're looking at. So that's important. And that's something that museums in general do. I'm personally interested in it because I want to, my collection, and I know other people who've given their collections to Southwest Regional Museum of Art and Art Center, are interested in leaving it for posterity. It's not that we're getting a lot of credit for this or anything like that, but we've amassed collections that mean something to us as a body of work. And so it's good to have the knowledge that it's going to be in a museum and a curator is going to use it to educate people and to mount an exhibition that people will really enjoy.
I think it's really important because, you know, now with computers and we're generating computer art, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. There's still artistic abilities that have to be there in order to create something artistic on a computer. But there's a big change from what was and what is now. And I think the more that we can save of what was highlights what is now, like the difference and why the difference is there. I mean, it is part of history. So I think it's really important that these pieces of art are protected and saved, which is why we have museums. I mean,
right.
Otherwise, we wouldn't know anything about our past, actually.
That's
true. Beyond our own family, maybe, and sometimes not even that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exhibition is important, but behind that is preservation. And we do want to store these things when they're not in an actual exhibit. We want to keep them safe, and we want to preserve them. So that is the other large definition, really, of what a museum does.
And you know, going to Alice Standish Buell, that's a name. Standish. It's not standoffish. I'm Standish.
No, that would be her.
When I saw her name, I'm sorry. I wondered if she was related in the past to Miles Standish.
It's exactly what I was going to say.
I tried to find out, but I was not really successful because I didn't give it enough time. But yes, the name is familiar.
There's got to be a connection.
And then Buell, that's interesting too. You know, she's got a good name. I'm still, you know, dig into some. We have to get some genealogists involved on that. But so she was born in Illinois. So that ties back to some of your, you know, history, your life. You know, going back into the Midwest, Ohio, Illinois. And, you know, like I was saying, you know, a few months ago, well, it was maybe a year ago, we did a show on how Illinois just struck me because of the ice on the trees. And
yes,
we're going to do it again.
Yeah.
And the fall, you know, there's something about these places that, you know, I was scared about. And now I'm like, you know what? I'm kind of, it's
the four seasons.
It's inching up on me, Victoria, to delve into these climates. But I am really fascinated about the art that comes out of the Midwest. And then, you know, and they all end up in, you know, New Mexico with you because of the light. But there's just a fascination to me. And I wonder about that, you know, these artists coming out of the... Just like what happened? Why? Like what happened in the Midwest that made all these artists like?
Well,
but you know what I mean, right?
There seems to be a thing. I do. Yeah. I think the Midwest is discounted unfairly many times by coastal people. But anyway,
yes.
I think from my experience, I've seen small towns in the Midwest, their whole community can be interested in art. Not that they're all doing it, but they're all supporting it, which is really important. It may possibly be because there's not that much other diversion, but I know in small towns, the people that live in small towns or areas around small towns, particularly where there's a college in the small town, those people their homes are full of art,
mm-hmm.
visual art.
Yeah.
And I always find that's interesting. They set aside money to buy pictures or buy sculpture or buy pottery. So mm-hmm. I find that wonderful and encouraging. A lot of people get their start in the Midwest. You're sort of driven because if you want to be a success on a certain level, you're sort of forced to go to a larger metropolitan area. And New York is certainly one of those. LA is one. Chicago is one. And when you mentioned Midwest, it made me think about Oak Park, which is where Alice Standish-Bell was born. And Oak Park figures in the biographies of many artists. And I find that interesting. Frank Lloyd Wright did work in Oak Park, for instance.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's I don't say we're a hotbed in the Midwest, but I think we're definitely an incubation area of fine art.
It's interesting because she went from Oak Park and then she went to Oberlin College in Ohio. But on your website, on your article about her, you said that she's not even listed in the alumni. So I wonder if she left at a certain point.
I believe she probably did. It's not unusual for people to start out in a college and not stay. But she went to New York and she went to the Art Students League, which was like the thing to do at the time in the early part of the 20th century. That was one of the places where you could go and your teachers were already famous artists. It was difficult to show your work before the 1950s, I would say, because there were not very many art galleries. So mm-hmm. when you look at a biography of somebody from that era, you'll see that when they wanted to get recognized, they would try to be part of, get their work into an exposition Century of Progress exhibition that was in Chicago. That would have been a big one for her.
Mm-hmm.
That was in the 30s. And when you had your work in an exhibition like that, people from all over the world would see it. So
the World Fair? The World Fair.
Yeah.
We should
those were
do pre, a show on the World Fair one day.
So that's what she did. But also in New York, she teamed up with a guy who was about 10 years older than her, who had come from Australia, who taught her to do etching. And his name was Martin Lewis. And he was really famous, probably more famous than she was. Not that he was any better, I don't think. But when you look at their work together, you can see how he influenced her and what he taught her as far as technique of printmaking. And mm-hmm. Their subjects tended to be a little bit different because he did a lot of urban scenes, cities and so forth. She more or less focused on rural scenes.
And that's interesting because of being in the Midwest, the rural look, you know,
right.
The farms, you know. I mean, it's beautiful. So that's interesting. So she kind of maybe stuck to her roots.
Well, yeah, you paint what you know.
Yeah. Of course, she moved to, Vermont, I think, and she spent time in Florida, too, both very rural areas. She spent a little bit of time in New York. She was very much involved in the business of art and supporting other artists, trying to kind of draw attention to all the artists. So she worked in groups that whose purpose that was, and so I think she spent a lot of time in New York too.
And when you say New York, do you mean mostly New York City or upstate New York? Because we went through upstate New York, and my God, it is drop dead gorgeous. It is.
Yes.
I mean, everyone would talk about this and the waterfalls and the Erie Canal and all of the, and then we saw it and we're like, holy cow, are you kidding me? Upstate New York is like meadows with wildflowers, like just like fields of mallow and hibiscus, kind of rose mallowy, beautiful. Like what the heck, you know? Because whenever you say, you know, not you in specific, I'm just saying, think New York. The first thing is we think of a city, you know, the city.
Yeah, exactly.
But upstate New York, oh my gosh, in Connecticut, I get it. I get why Weir was there. I get it now. I'm like, I get it. And it's, but yet you're going to have those really drastic four seasons. And what blows my mind is how did the seasons work? Because it's so much work for nature. Like you're going to produce all this snow and then suddenly spring is there. But how do you go through all that fast? You know, 3 months isn't long enough. I'm just saying. So it's like, to me, I find it really fascinating about how these artists all and writers and, you know, all of these people just, you know, on Golden Pond, I'm like, dude, there's so many golden ponds.
That's what's so inspiring for artists is all the change. I mean, if something's the same all the time, it's like you really got to search for something new to paint. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to really dig deep for that. And, you know, if you're painting nature and you've got seasonal changes, then man, that's heaven. Mm-hmm. It's right there, you know, and it encompasses almost every emotion.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that living in two rural areas was helpful to her, you know, because she produced a wide range of prints that did depict more than one season. So, I mean, in Florida, you don't have the seasonal thing. In Vermont, she definitely did, and I think that her work, you know, shows that.
Mm. It's fascinating to me. And then, like what you were saying, that she got in the business aspect, realizing, hey, us artists need to do something. That's something, you know, through the conversations over the years with you is really realized, and then traveling. Was really put it together. Like there are areas, like look at Silver City, where it just all these artists and writers and musicians, like if you're gonna have art, visual art, you're gonna have filmmakers come in, you're gonna have musicians, like all of a sudden everyone's coming to hang out with each other. Sometimes it's like in, you know, we always talk about Natchitoches, Louisiana, Melrose Plantation became a hub for artists. You know, that's where Clementine Hunter, the folk artist, you know, she you know, came out of there. She was a field hand out there and she was surrounded by all these artists and writers and musicians, you know, they had. So to me, I think that's a fascinating thing about how artists do, even though it's solitary, we talk about that. It's a solitary thing to paint, but it seems to me that artists gather together. And so it sounds like she kind of used that to further art along so that people could be prosperous through the arts.
Yes. I mean, I think she really wanted to help the whole, I'll call it a profession, but she knew these people as individuals, not just as a profession. So yeah, I think she really was trying to lift her fellow artists up in New York.
Was she making enough of it on her own to be able to think she's lifting them up, or is she lifting herself up too?
I think she was. She produced a prodigious amount of prints. years. And I think she sold quite well. I can't say that for a fact, but her work, besides being in these expositions where people got to know her, her work was purchased by the Whitney Museum. She was in the Met. She was in the National Gallery, or she still is. I mean, her work is there. And she was recognized by her fellows in the Philadelphia Printmakers Club. So I think when you're recognized by your fellow artists, that's always one of the biggest compliments that you could ever get.
Well, and I think especially as a woman back then, you had to work harder as usual. And so for her to kind of pick up the reins and say, okay, I'm going to make a change here right now. Like, I'm going to make sure women are part of this too. Yeah. So, you know, I think that you have to work together to, especially when you're doing something creative, you know, because, you know, when you buy a piece of art or a piece of music or whatever that is artistic, it isn't something you're going to live in or eat. It's not a need, it's a want.
That's true.
Yeah. And so now some people will argue with it that they can't live without their pieces of art. That's cool. But for most people, it's a want. It's a need, not a want. So I think it's harder. And back then, the marketing, having to start marketing your art in order to actually make a living as an artist, especially as a woman, I think that must have been incredibly difficult.
Well, yeah, I think when you think about sales, I mean, so many people aren't sales people. I mean,
exactly.
For instance, I don't like talking about my own art, but I can talk all day about somebody else's art. So, and I think, I don't think that's atypical of artists.
No.
So, because artists, generally speaking, aren't performers, and they're generally working in sort of solitary and doing a lot of thinking, which isn't very dynamic to watch somebody think, but there's a lot of thinking that goes into your project or your creation before you ever grab the clay or pick up a brush. So, I'm not sure where I was going with that, but
it's difficult. And then and then you go and put it on display and listen to everybody's critique of it.
Well, everybody has an opinion.
There's a saying about that.
That's a good thing. But one of the things that strikes me when I look at her list of, I don't say accomplishments because these were chosen by somebody else about her, but she has work in the Library of Congress, yes, and her work is in the collection of the Art Students League, which is good. But I think that the one that strikes me is that the National Museum for Women in the Arts want her to be represented in their collection. And I find that
that's cool.
A strong reason to think that she not only was a good artist, but that she was working for artists. Mm-hmm. And they obviously thought she was, because of her sex and so forth, they see her as a representative of women in the arts.
Well, and it's her dedication to it. You know, that she wasn't just, I'll paint on my time off.
But her time frame, you've got to think that her time is, you know, you've got to think, you know, World War II. Think about it, right? Yeah. What she was living through. I mean, she was born in 1892, died in the 64, was it?
62.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Anyway, so, well, you know, she obviously was, you know, in her prime in the 30s, 40s. And you've got to think about the World Wars. She went through that.
She was producing into the 50s, at least I know. The 20s to the 50s were when she was most productive.
And you've got to think what was going on in the world. I mean, right now we're looking at that with the Queen, right, having just passed. And we're looking at her legacy is, and whether or not you like the royal family thing or not, or those kind of monarchy kind of rules, that's a system, right? So we can either like the system or not. But Queen Elizabeth II, she did a lot. I mean, she rode motorcycles. Mm-hmm. She was served in World War II. She did a lot. I mean, as a woman, you've got to look at her and go, she was impressive. And she ruled for a very long time. And
longer
when you look
than
at
anybody else.
Right. And you've got to think about these women that were productive outside of, you know, hey, you're the housewife and you will make me dinner by 9 o'clock or 7 o'clock. No. Or what, you know, because if you think about those eras, right, where women were not necessarily viewed as being profitable in things, you know what I mean? It was just that era. Yeah, but at the same time, we had, you know, pioneers like Amelia Earhart. And so we had a lot of women who kicked ass. But mm-hmm. at the same time, the
I'm trying to picture Elizabeth kicking ass, but...
Yeah. Yeah. But you know what I mean? The global and national way women were supposed to be was not what was going on. And the arts have always been the prod. The arts have always gone, no, we need to do it this way or, you know, screw you on this. And so women in the arts, that's a huge deal. I mean, and still is to this day about that freedom that art has about, you know, all kinds of things.
It's solitary, but it's inclusive.
Yeah.
Which is it's a real, that's a tightrope.
And it throws the system overboard. See, that's the thing.
You know, other artists, male artists have always been supportive of female artists. I mean, mm-hmm. barring certain personality disorders.
Right. Yes.
But in general, however, it's the outside the artist, community. Mm-hmm. Because they did support each other. They did encourage each other because good art is good art, and they recognized it.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes outside that, you're dependent on art hangers-on, like you're dependent on museum curators, or you're dependent on somebody who's a museum or art writer, or you're mm-hmm. dependent on somebody else. And that's where I think the recognition for women in the arts has always been spotty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the United States, we'll just leave it to the United States right now.
Okay.
Otherwise, we're gonna,
don't you want to go home and embroider something?
Hey, listen, there's talent in that too.
I think I'll do a sampler based on that.
I know that wouldn't it be funny to do a whole painting as a piece of embroidery?
Yeah. So anyway, I appreciate my fellow artists, whether they be men or women. And I think most of the people in the arts, whatever kind of art they're involved with, do appreciate their fellow artists, no matter what they do.
I mean, I really agree with you.
They're really producing.
Because even in music. Yeah, because you're putting yourself out there against the ordinary, against the regular routine.
Right.
You're wearing your heart on the sleeve sometimes where people go, that's outlandish. And you're like, yeah, that's supposed to be. But you're putting yourself out there, whether or not you're quiet about it. You're putting that painting goes out, you know, whether it's an etching, maybe it's a piece of music, could be fashion. Like, that's a whole other world. Jesus. Some of the stuff that you see on a runway, you go like, what? Like, who's going to wear that? But it is like this whole other art form that is cool to see, though. Like with people on the runway wearing these, like,
can you swim in it?
I'm just like, what is that? You know, but it's an art form, and I like looking at it because it's like, wow, okay, that's a whole other thing. Like hair, look at what people do with hair. You know, so but artists do support each other because you know you're going out on your limb no matter what. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you're painting a rural painting of a beautiful farm and a barn and. you know, it looks, you know, you're still putting yourself out there because you know someone's going to have an opinion. And the whole point is that you should have an opinion, you know, or a feeling or an emotion, you know. Right. So it's,
I think artists got dealt a kind of a bad deal when the term starving artist came about. And I don't think that applies just to painting. I think it applies to all art forms, actors and musicians and everything. When people, I don't know where the saying came from, the starving artist.
Because a lot of people did starve as artists because they didn't.
I know, but that saying just did a lot of harm.
You know what? I think that's a whole other show. Yeah. I think so, because think about it, when you going back to the kings and queens, they used to pay for that. The artists would, you know, there was that whole royalty.
Well, I think you lived
thing.
At the palace. Mm-hmm. And if you were like, what were the people who performed in from the king of
the jesters?
Yeah, the jesters. Yes, yeah, court jesters. But so you would have a patron of the arts, which.
Yeah,
patron,
but are you free to do what you really want? What if you wanted to paint something that showed the king on the toilet or something?
I really think you wouldn't do that. You'd be beheaded.
See, but then you're not freedom of art. Sorry, Victoria. Well, we always go down the toilet. I'm sorry.
Is that really art?
That you're bringing up some interesting thoughts here. It's causing my mind just to nearly short out.
Yeah.
because I just saw. A documentary about Turner, the watercolorist J.M.W. Turner, who was a British watercolorist, who was and I was only familiar with his really creative stuff, where he was, you know, painting the London like it was in a fog, and he did these beautiful colors in it, and everything, the loose brushwork, and he was painting it, you know, really as he saw it. But prior to that, he had done conventional seascapes with boats and real tight detail and so forth. Well, he had an exhibition of his new work, and it was you know, hyped up because everybody liked his old work, and so they wanted to see what was new. Well, the Queen Victoria came to it. And she did not like it. Prior to that, everybody loved his new work. They just thought it was wonderful. But when she was making derogatory comments about how messy it was and so forth, everybody turned against him. And I say everybody's too general a term, but all the critics, all the people who were sycophants to the queen, you know, the minor royalty and so forth, they all turned against him. And so he actually died in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Certain people have so much power when they express their opinion. And they're certainly okay to do that. They have every right. But we should learn to form our own opinions.
Well, exactly. I was going to say that, because it's not that they're stronger. It's
right.
Just, you know, pick up, just put on your big girl or big boy shoes. Come on, people.
Put on your big girl pants, as the Kia Hooker
says.
Yeah,
come on. I was being nice.
Put on your big girl pants. Yeah, that's what she says.
Make up your own mind about what you like and what you don't like. And then once you decide, I like this and I don't like that, just strive to educate, and then you'll find yourself morphing in something else and seeing appreciation in other things you thought you didn't like.
But this is about influence, right? And art and the society, the you know, social butterflies and those.
That's a whole other thing. I can't say that Queen Elizabeth was trying to influence everybody else,
but she did.
It couldn't be helped just because of who she was, and because so many other people. Yeah.
I just really hate that word, influencers. Yeah.
But
that's the way it's
even
used
now
today.
We're dealing with
the influencers.
Yeah.
No, stop it.
But we're dealing with that, and it's always been that way. It's like,
stop it.
It's It is a very interesting thing in the art world. Is like, if so-and-so likes your music, then everybody needs to go and like that music. You know, and I think that the more we get into that mode, then art is supposed to give you that personal thought, you know, that expression.
It's and artists,
yeah, we're losing that if we're always, just if so-and-so does this, I'm going to do it too. Care. We'll go, it's the same saying, are you going to jump off the bridge because the other person did? If the influencer jumped off the bridge.
I mean, the colors of this, you know, this year are green and pink, so everybody must have a green and pink sofa. No, thank you very much and good night. Stop it. Just
see, isn't that about art though, Victoria? It's interesting because I just think about all the conversations we've had over the years of, okay, so now here comes the impressionist because so-and-so and everybody's like, ooh, this is a whole new technique.
Yeah, it's
cool. But when you think about the development of art styles, that's a cool thing. I mean, like music, suddenly, now we have this style of music, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's cool. That's a new creative thing that everybody can get on and do it as they want or not want, right? But I think it's interesting about art because it is, again, about being original. And I always go back to that time when we, you know, met up with you in Silver City, we were doing the 8 keys of excellence, and you're just like, integrity is the first key of excellence. You're like, art is integrity. If you don't have mm-hmm. integrity, you don't have art, kind of like you. It was like I don't think you even had 30 seconds of what you said. You just like, that's it. It's like, you have to be 100% real, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing now. We've always had influencers in some way, whether it's the society column and the social butterflies or now the Instagram kings and queens who, hey, let me take a photo next to the bison in Yellowstone. Oopsie, I died. You know,
we have that. Mr. Bison, could you move over 2 inches?
But if you think about it, Alice, right? I'm going back to her. You've got to think about her knowing, this is an important newspaper person who always covers art or someone who supports the arts. So there's always been that, you know, the influencer that you do want. I mean, that's just, isn't that kind of how human beings are in a way? Like
we're herd animals, a lot of us.
Well, I think there are a lot of people who are unsure of themselves in certain areas. They might be the CEO of a corporation, but they don't know. Let's just say they don't know anything about visual art or music, or maybe they've never seen poetry or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so they'll make some comment, and somebody, you know, quite a few people will accept that as gospel, and they haven't formed their opinion. They're just going along with what somebody they respect thinks. And I mean, we're never going to stop that. It's just, I think Nancy's right. It's just been around and
ever. But the whole point of art is to make you have your own reaction to it and your own ideas.
Right.
That's the whole point.
And whatever that reaction is fine.
It's fine.
You know, you don't have to make the artist feel good.
No, but you shouldn't be mean and rude.
Don't let them starve. But that's why the starving. Yeah. We're going to have to do a whole show on the starving artist. In fact, I've developed this whole thing in my head already on it. But I wanted to go.
We need to find out who the original starving.
Yeah, I know. Who said it in the beginning.
No, this is great because it's even for musicians and some musicians. They wanted it part of their story.
Musicians.
There are bands that they did it on purpose. They didn't go home to mama and, you know, they did it. Like, I know musicians that basically use the light bulb to heat their canned soup kind of thing. You know, that's not really possible, is it? But they did.
I have no idea.
No, they want that story too. So there's so many avenues. We'll have to do another show on that because that is just too delicious. You know, not the soup. Mm-hmm. Not the cold soup in a can, but because that's just not, no. But, you know, we have to do a thing on that. But I want to go back to her Was she married? Do you have any, like, you know, gossip about her? Like, was Alice married? Did she have kids? Because no, I mean this in a way, because it's interesting, you know, just to know who she was on that side. Because it seems like she was kind of quiet.
And I did research a number of places, and I could find no record of her having married. I don't know if her last name was Standish or it was her middle name, and Buell was her family name. So
yeah,
because there were many Buells that came over on the Mayflower along with the Standishes. And they settled in the same area.
I would think Standish would be her mother's last name, and Buell would be her father's.
We don't know. I'm sorry, Lisa.
But I want to know. I'm being like a baby now. I want to know. So it's interesting. I mean, do you think that, okay, I'm just going to put this out there. Do you think that it's possible that when those kind of things aren't documented, when she was pretty much prominent, right, leading up art groups, trying to get things made, that maybe she was gay and then it's hush hush?
Oh,
and that's why you're not hearing anything? No. I'm just wondering because at that time maybe it was a no-no, or maybe it was fine. I don't know, depending on where. No, but maybe at that time frame, you know.
I'm sure people of various proclivities have existed for millennia, but I saw nothing in her anything written about her that would indicate one way or another you know, where she stood on the sex question.
Maybe she's just like me, just doesn't care. She just said, screw it, I'm doing my art and I don't care about any of that stuff. You know what I mean?
And her artwork didn't reflect anything other than landscape
if you just Google her name, it comes up. She married Josiah Bradley Buell on October 27th, October 1917.
Okay, now where did you find that one? Because Wikipedia didn't have that.
It's on Family Search. I don't know if this is the right one, but I just...
Oh, okay.
I don't know, but that could be a totally different person.
Well, it should have the birth dates or the location, but anyway, that may answer your question.
Yeah.
Oh, so I'm just asking because when you don't find any of like that kind of thing, you wonder if they hit it. Yeah, you know what I mean? That's because of the way the world is, you know. So I'm just, you know, wondering about that. But I
don't think it's the same person.
Oh, so there you go.
No.
But I'm going to ask Lynn, our English correspondent, about the last name Standish and Buell and see what he can dig up too, because he might have some history on his side, because that does sound like a British kind of name to me.
They were British. Yeah, they were Mayflower arrivals.
I'll ask him, because he may know stuff that we don't know, because he often knows stuff that Nancy and I don't know.
That's his specialty.
Like most people know way more. So that's cool. But I'll ask him about that and see what we can do. But I want to do something on starving artists. Where did that whole thing start? And, you know, I think it'd be great. And because it's fascinating. It's definitely fascinating. But I'm glad you always bring up these artists and women. Everyone stay tuned for our upcoming Celebrate the Arts magazine, where you'll see all of these interviews we've done over the last year with Victoria about these women in the arts. We're very excited about it. So stay tuned. If you go to blendradioandtv.com, you can sign up for our newsletter there and get our weekly magazines, because we're weekly now. Isn't that exciting?
Yes.
Yes.
It is exciting.
It is exciting. Yes. We're weekly with a different magazine and a themed issue every single week. So
maybe we should name the magazine The Starving Artist.
I know, it'd be cool. I feel like somebody should have like a ramen noodle pack, like, you know, in college, you know, the starving college student, the ramen noodles, or like this can of spaghetti, like the starving artist spaghetti. Somebody has to do something with that. I think you're right. Everyone keep up with Victoria at victoriachick.com. You can view her work there. And of course, keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. Victoria's here every third Saturday. She puts up with us. Like, I don't know how she does, but she does. So thank you so much, Victoria.
You're more than welcome. And we'll talk to you next month.
Absolutely. Cool.